Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Bra.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Strange Cast, Player One vs. World Life is Strange podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adnan. My co-host Adam is here. Adam, here.
I'm here. Hey guys, if you haven't, you should check out StrangeCast. It's a really good podcast. I just wanted to shout that out. Check out StrangeCast if you haven't already.
I agree. It's a very good podcast.
Yeah.
Sometimes debatable, but also very good. But no, thank you for the shout out. But yes, we're back. New episode. This is our first episode. Well, no, actually, last episode of November. What was the first episode of December? Never mind. Last episode of November, this is, but yeah, thank you for joining us. As always, if you are new here, please do consider dropping a subscribe on the YouTube channel, turn notifications, like the video and share with your friends. It just helps us boost the channel's visibility, helps to support the channel more than anything else. And also StrangeCast is available on all your podcast services, so you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, available on Spotify, the video version, and elsewhere as well. So do check us out. And obviously, if you are found us on Spotify, because where we get a big visibility boost, we're on YouTube, so do come over and comment on the video and, you know, let us know your thoughts as well. It's nice to see new faces pop up. And also a big thank you for the last episode. It was actually one of our best on YouTube in the last couple of months as well, which is quite crazy. I think a bad friend debate usually does that, doesn't it, Adam? that usually does that. But anyway, we're back. We've got a full episode here with a lot of stuff. Adam, should we kick things off with the first piece of news?
Definitely, yes.
So this is one of two pieces of news that we have for this episode. So we're going to Twitter, and I thought this was very interesting. It just popped up in my feed. So we're going to very AFK Twitter handle and Cromwell their handle. And they put, reply to this tweet if you're someone who, in a production meeting, instead insisted on unskippable cutscenes. I want to understand you sickos. This is a very interesting passive-aggressive way of putting it. But obviously the story is that Michel Coe, Life is Strange's 1 and 2 co-director, and also Don't Know Montreal's creative director, replied to this and gave us a bit of conversation to be had here about Life is Strange. And he put, in games like Life is Strange, it's a complicated topic, since so much of the game's main ingredient is a blend of dialogue and cutscenes with tons of variations based on the player's choice. So what we did was allow to skip any part you already saw in a previous playthrough. That was the first tweet. And the second one, he put, maybe we should allow skip from the get-go in games like this, though. But then, how to notify people during a replay that the cutscene slash dialogue has changed in it because of their previous different choices? So I thought it was a very interesting take. Adam, would you like to go first, or would you like me to take it?
Yeah, I have some thoughts on this, just because, like, Michelle shouldn't allow skips for games that involve choice and dialogue, because that's the thing. It's just like, how are you supposed to choose, and how are you supposed to know what to choose if you already skipped the dialogue in there? There's some things where just like dialogue is necessary in a story, and cutscenes are necessary in a story. However, there are games where there are unskippable cutscenes. I'm thinking back in the day of like NBA 2K17, where like if you wanted to play the story, those cutscenes were not skippable, and that drove people crazy. I like the story of NBA 2K17. I personally did. I thought it was a good one. However, if you're just in it for a basketball game, which that's what NBA 2K was, it's a basketball game, then why are we not letting people skip the cutscenes? The story's not important. However, for games that, like Life is Strange, like what Michelle's saying, is that it's based on choice, it's based on dialogue, it's based on relationship. So yes, the cutscene shouldn't be skippable in that way. So I guess it's just time and place kind of situation, where just, you know, if the whole game is cutscene, then why are we going to allow to skip cutscenes, you know?
No, I agree with you, because I was thinking about this myself. Like, there's some scenes in games like Outlast and Resident Evil 7, the beginning intros, are just long. And you like, and especially with someone like me, when I watch like games done quick and stuff like that, they've like streamed those. And then they're usually sitting there with people being like, well, we need to watch all these before we start the actual speed run. Or sometimes they use like a modded version, which is like on their leaderboards, where it's like you can speed run it. So I get it as well in certain parts, and obviously, as you said with the NBA games, like the quality of those cutscenes is questionable.
Oh God, dude! 2K16 was wild because it was a Spike Lee directed story.
I remember that they did like so much marketing about it.
It was so weird, and like I wanted to skip Sony cutscenes because like that story went off it went off in so many different directions. Like, what is going on here? That one I wanted to skip. Yeah, dude, like. And that's the thing. It's like, it's a basketball game. Like, I want to play basketball, not, you know, have my friend be killed in a car accident. Like, what happened? Spoiler alert if you haven't played the story of 2K16. But yeah, your friend dies in a car accident.
That's a wild throwback. You remember that? Because I just remember them talking about it so much. I was like, why is Spike Lee even involved in this?
Yeah.
It's like Ron Howard making a Madden story game. Or like, M. Night yeah. Shyamalan making a FIFA story game or something. He's like, come on.
Actually, if I remember correctly, there was another famous director that wrote like a Madden story, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Oh, you remember in FIFA 2K, FIFA 17 through 19, there was a story of Alex Hunter?
The Journey.
The Journey. That one, I thought, talking about unskippable cutscenes, I thought that one was worth the story in terms of like watching mm-hmm. the cutscenes through because there was choice based in that. So I do think in that one, the unskippable cutscenes were fine. However, in other sports games, just like, what are we doing here? But they made that a trilogy, dude. Like, I wish people could play The Journey just as a standalone game. It was really good.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, The Journey, in retrospect. Funny enough as well, one of my old colleagues actually interviewed Alex Hunter. He went and tracked him down. And did an interview, which is quite crazy. But no, like it is interesting in certain cases because I get where Michelle's coming across with this as well. Because like even with the games he's made, like Life is Strange 1 feels like it does it the best. Like once you've like run through a cutscene with dialogue and everything else, then you can fast forward it again with Max's time mechanics. And it's like, actually, this is kind of convenient. So you can basically re-listen to the same thing, pick another choice, but you can skip all these cutscenes if you want. And that's really good. But then it's like, when you look at like Life is Strange 2, and I've played like, for example, The Walking Dead, Telltale's game. Yes. I played it like 7 times because I wanted to get all the platinums on different versions. I wanted to skip it sometimes thinking, oh, I wish I could just like skip through this, get the platinum. But then at the same time, I'm like, actually, the story wouldn't make any sense. The game wouldn't make any sense. There'd be no cohesion with it. And at the same time, I kind of actually enjoy playing this again, even if it feels like I could play that game 200 times and not be bothered by it. It's an interesting debate to be had. I think, personally speaking, some cutscenes should be skipped on the second playthrough, at least. I think, like, if somehow, and obviously we've spoken about this before, we're not game devs or anything, but if there's like a way of like working into the game where it's like you, on a second playthrough, once the game's like acknowledged you played the first time, you could skip something completely. That'd be great. Personally,
like, imagine a world where you don't have the option to skip a track on an album. Like, imagine that. All of my albums you want to skip the tracks, but you know, I do like how Michelle also points out that, like, we do allow skip on what you said, like on your second playthrough, like you can skip your cutscenes, but like in Life is Strange, if you already heard that dialogue, you have that fast forward button to like go through it because you already heard it and you don't need to hear it again. Michelle Coe said it best. In games like Life is Strange, it's a complicated topic, period. It's a complicated topic. It's because, like, you want, and that's the other thing. It's like the thing I think about is like voice actors put their work into this, animators put their work into this, and you just want to go ahead and like months, years of work, just be like, press a button, like, no, I don't want to see your work. No. It's just like,
yeah,
it's complicated. You want to give them the freedom of choice, but at the same time, screw you for wanting to like just press a button and like get rid of years of work. I don't know. Maybe it's the artist in me saying that, but like, screw you.
Yeah, I get it as well, because like I like the fact that Michelle has acknowledged the fact that he's a sicko as well, because this was addressed to the sickos in the tweet. But no, it's interesting though, because even the music as well, I can tell you now, I don't know how last time I actually listened to a full album. I usually just skip through tracks. I just skip through. I'm like, yeah, well, I listen to the same song like 50 times over. Like,
yeah.
But like, I'll pick songs and like just from the track from the album, my three or four favorite songs, and I'll listen to them on repeat, and I won't listen to the other ones. Which is I can see your.
it's only certain albums that like it's good from like point A to point B.
Yeah.
And I love like one of the most recent albums that I'm just like they actually got. And this is going back to the topic of this of unskippable cutscenes, that when we're talking about skipping tracks, right? Water Parks put out an album called Fandom, and they actually designed it to be a cyclical album. They designed it to be like from point A to point B. This is a cohesive album. And Austin Knight, who is the frontman for Water Parks, said like, we didn't want to make an album that was just a collection of singles. We wanted to make an album, right? It was very specific in the tracks that it all is cohesive, right? Mm-hmm. So that you don't want to skip over any tracks. So that's important to listen to all the tracks. Going back to unskippable cutscenes, you want to make cutscenes that are cohesive to the story that you don't want to skip over. You should be where you're trying to put purpose behind it, you know. I don't know the word What's that
meaning?
I guess I don't know
conviction.
But,
I'm from here now. Throwing association game.
Yeah, you're from Oxford, you should know. Like but yeah, no, like you should be more intentional. Thank you. You should be very intentional with what you should be putting out as saying, like, I don't want people to skip this cutscene because of point A, point B, point C. In the same way that musicians should be designing albums to be like, hey, I want this to flow like this so that nobody wants to skip and there's actual cohesion with all the album. Same thing with cutscenes. I think there should be more intentionality behind, hey, this scene is here for this purpose, while also giving them the freedom of choice, but you should also be working that nobody wants to skip that track or skip that cutscene, you know. It's a lot of work, and I think a lot of game devs can be a little bit forgetting another word here, a little bit entitled. Yes, stubborn, entitled, something like that, where it's like, why would you want to skip my cutscene? It's like, you didn't put enough work into like drag me in, you know? Same thing with musicians. Like, I will understand if people listen to one of my albums and they skip over tracks because I didn't put the work in for you to not want to skip that track, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cyclical thing, but I think there should be intentionality behind cutscenes as well.
So it's interesting you mention all that, especially with music and even with games, because games as well, for me, are the only medium which can have unskippable content.
Yeah.
Because like for films, except for when you watch it in the cinema, when you order the DVD, if you've seen it a million times, you can skip past something. If you find it cringe.
Imagine
if
you're sitting in your seat, just like, skip this scene. They just like going to the projection, it's like, skip it. Fast forward.
That would be a new kind of cinema experience, if anything. but no, like, as you said, like with music though, like you can, with music, film, TV, like I've done it before when I've watched a new TV show, I can skip something because I find it a bit cringy watching it the second time around.
Yeah.
Video games are the only ones that, as you said, you have something where you can kind of do something that you have no control over.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. Like even with music as well, like the last album, I think like last couple of albums I've listened to fully from start to finish is like, for example, one of my favorites is Kanye West, Life of Pablo. Love that album.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I think also as well, I think it works on who the musician is as well. So, and here's another one. One of my favorite musicians is Zedd. I love Zedd.
Oh God. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And in his two albums, True Colors and why is it? I can't remember. Oh my God.
Oh, I can't remember either.
Oh my God. What's it? Is it? It's not Clarity. That Clarity is a song. Oh my God.
Clarity is the single.
Oh my God. I can't remember what the first album's called. I feel awful for this. Anyway.
You know how I feel.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, I love him as well. I'm mad that he's only ever dropped two full albums as well. Like, anyway.
Oh, it was Clarity. Clarity was the name of the album.
Oh, right. Thank God for that. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
because I saw him live as well once, which was crazy. But Zed, who's like an EDM DJ, was tipped to be like the next Skrillex, if not better. He is better than Skrillex anyway.
Oh, he's way better than Skrillex, yeah. Too. Miles.
He was like Skrillex's protege, and like he did like some great like bangers. I think he like went viral at one point when he did like the Zelda Legend of Zelda theme remix as well. Like he just did amazing songs. But like the two albums that he has there, I will listen to them to start to finish, because the way that the tracks are built, the ending always leads into the next song.
Yes.
So it's like there's always like a kind of like a, you need to listen to this song because it's pivoting into that. And other albums will do it, other genres will do it. I know the Game has done it with some rap albums, but it depends on how you like structuring it. So those albums are important with it. Otherwise, most artists, I'll just pick up their songs and just listen to where I need to. But I find it interesting with Games as well. They've always been very stubborn with like cutscenes. So it's like, I agree with Michelle, but then sometimes I'm wishing like, if you had like Resident Evil 7 and I just want to play it through casual playthrough and storm through it, I'd love to skip the original cutscene at the beginning, but I can't. I have to sit there and watch the entire thing again. And it's like, oh, it's like, if only.
It is kind of wild that he only has two albums, by the way. I didn't realize it was only two. And the last one came out in 2015.
2015. Mad. I'm like, this guy's like, he dropped like loads of like, you know, like singles and like whatever else in between, but never dropped another album. And I'm like, this is wild.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, I think there's a lot to say about intentionality of how you build like any kind of art. Like I said, like whenever I design the EPs, like I'm thinking like, how will this EP flow? I'm not just like throwing songs in there. Like, there has to be intentionality behind it. And the best albums of all time, there's intentionality of how it builds. And that's why you want to listen to the whole album. But at the same time, it's like, I think there should be the same intentionality with cutscenes, that you should be not inclined to skip them. You should want to be a part of them. But Spike Lee's story in 2K16, that was too wild, dude.
That feels like a distant memory as well. That's a wild crossover anyway. But no, I thought it was interesting that he mentioned, and I think again it just depends on what the game is and what you're building. Like those episodic games you can't skip, it just makes no sense. And then I kind of appreciate what he said, because I actually played recently. I played Injustice 2. I had it on PS Plus for ages. I had it on my hard drive for some reason, downloaded it. I kind of wanted to play it as a game in between playing Spider-Man, and there's another game that we will come on to. But I played it, and then at one point, the cutscenes are weird as well during story mission. You play through it, and like they have this massive cutscene leading up to the next part of the section. And if you like quit at a certain point, you'll have to like rewatch the cutscene at the end of the previous chapter and then going into the next chapter. I remember turning my console back on. I wanted to skip this cutscene, so I'd watched half it anyway, beginning of it, and I wanted to start the next chapter. But what it did instead was it put me straight up to the first decision at that chapter, where it was like, which fighter are you going to pick to battle this character? And I'm like, hang on a minute, I didn't even see the first part of this cutscene and what actually happened. And I was like, actually, maybe there is a debate now of like being like, you know, developer being like, actually, you need to watch all these cutscenes and not be able to skip it. And I know you like fighting games, but at the same time, it's like you just lost a big portion of the story there. It's an interesting take. Do you have anything else to add about it?
No, listen to more albums, but also musicians, build better albums.
Yes, I think that is a lost art as well on albums. I'll just say that as well, with building a cohesive like story and structure, etc. with that. But nonetheless, I think we can leave it there, and it's very good. Speaking of Michelle, speaking of Dr. Montreal, speaking of a lot of people on those lines, we're going to Twitter again. This is our other main news story to focus on the episode. And this comes from Luke Bagados, who we speak about a lot on here, the studio executive producer at Dr. Montreal. I hope he's feeling a lot better after his kidney stone stuff. You know him from Life is Strange. You know him from Life is Strange 2. And he tweeted something on the 11th of November, 2023. He put, I'm currently at Low Birth Games launch party for This Bed We Made. I'm 2 hours in and I love it. Amazing to see how this small team has managed to create such a good first game. Fans of Life is Strange, you should play it. And he's put a screenshot in the tweet, Adam, of Frank's Beans, which is obviously a nice little reference to Life is Strange 1. So would you like me to take this topic?
Yeah, go for it.
So yeah, I've this is a game that Luke has been involved in as a mentor, as he's mentioned in the credit. Low Birth Games is a Canadian studio based in Montreal. They have made a new game called This Bed We Made. It has released. It is an indie game. It's like a 1950s noir style thriller game. Mm. When I say it's psychological, so it's a thriller game, mystery, heavily inspired by Life is Strange. What seems to be appearing inspired by like LA Noir and other games along those lines. And I actually have played it, surprisingly. Hey ho, this is a bit of a surprise. Yeah, it's a bit of a curveball here.
Yeah.
So on context, I've known about Low Birth games for a while. Like, I started seeing their marketing, if anything. Like, a lot of people would put their game in groups of Life is Strange on like Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, or like, you know, wherever you could see it, people like, oh, look at this Life is Strange inspired game. So at least for your marketing team, that's a good kudos, because you kind of like hit the nail on the head of like audience that you kind of want to attract. And my first kind of like awareness of it came through Facebook ads, which is quite wild. For this game. And then occasionally as well, after that as well, I kept seeing Luke pop up in the studio. I was like, do you know these people? Like, you must be involved in this in some kind of way, shape, or form. And he obviously gets a nod in the credits for the game as a mentor, and rightfully so as well. So it came out. I was kind of like do I want to buy it? Do I not want to buy it? I'm not too sure at this point. It's like, I'm you know, money is pretty tight at the minute. And I've just bought Spider-Man, etc. And it wasn't in my budget allowance. But you know what? I was like, Adam, I'll throw the dice. And I'll pick up this bed we made. So I picked it up this week. We're recording the 18th of November. I picked it up, I think, maybe a couple of days after its release or something. Played it in 2 days, finished it. So I thought I'd give you my first thoughts, yeah?
I was about to say, how long is the game then?
So I bought the game for £25, British pounds, which I think before this episode you checked was $25. Am I right?
It's just about. I think pounds to dollars is pretty equivalent. So let's say £25 to kilograms. Got it. £25 in US dollars is actually $31. But I looked it up. It is $25 in the US. US dollars.
Win-win. That's a win-win. So I picked up for £25, a little bit more than what I expected. However, I'm willing to pay for what I buy. The game, to answer your question, is about 4 to 6 hours long. Probably faster if you just, you know, do one of those kind of playthroughs where you just blitz through it. My position in this game, though, it's interesting. And that's the best compliment I can ever give a game. If you caught my curiosity and I've played it out of the unexpected and I'm intrigued by it, that's the best compliment I can give you. And I'd put this game in the same bracket as the first Life is Strange, The Council. I'd put it in that same realm of game where it's like my curiosity had been itched. I played it and I was very, very happy that I played it, at least. It was very interesting, the premise, what they were doing as well. And obviously the huge Life is Strange inspiration is there on it. You're basically, for context on the story, and this would probably be helpful if I give you, you are a maid in a hotel.
Okay.
1950s Canada, I believe I'm right about that. 1950s, 1960s. So it's very topical for its set. You're a maid. Something happens. You need to uncover this mystery. I'm not going to give any more details about it. I'm not going to give any more of the synopsis about that, because I kind of went in a little bit blind. I knew it was more of a thriller mystery kind of game, if anything. So I'm not going to tell you more about the story or anything else with that. So that's the game, essentially. You are a maid in a hotel. You're working in this hotel. You know, you need to uncover this mystery.
Yes.
Follow me, Adam?
I'm following. I'm also trying to see, because on the website, and we talked about this before we recorded, like, it says it's listed for Xbox as well as Steam and PlayStation. I am not seeing it on Xbox. But, you know, so far, like, not to interrupt Adnan, but it is definitely on Steam and PlayStation. I'm just trying to, without being on my Xbox, like, see if it is on Xbox.
I would be surprised if they didn't drop an Xbox. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't make a dev kit for it and use that for the Xbox.
Yeah,
it's easy to
make
games on with Xbox.
I'm trying to make sure this bed we made, right?
This bed we made, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on the Xbox store, but I don't know. That is weird. But, you know, it is definitely on PlayStation, just letting everybody know. So if you have PlayStation and if you have Steam, And it's so far on Steam ranked a 9 out of 10 on Steam. Yeah.
So this game's got like really good reviews from people who played it, people who have like smaller outlets who have reviewed it. The only thing with Low Birth is that they're going to basically be stuck with the marketing that they have to do. They need to push out to as many people as possible. Like, it's kind of a bit unfortunate that it's getting snubbed by bigger outlets. Like, this is a pure indie game, by the way. This feels very, like, do you remember they said, like, with the first Life is Strange, it was bankrolled by Square Enix, and it was a third-party game, essentially.
This feels... man, I have something to say about this, about pure indie games, by the way.
Oh, God.
Okay, so, my favorite, one of my favorite podcasts to listen to is the Nintendo, or, yeah, Nintendo, but also Wolf Den podcast, which is kind of like... Anyway, so I heard this on Wolf Den, and they're talking about the Game Awards, about best indie game, and apparently there's controversy, right? And I think this is a good controversy, where Dave the Diver, which I'm playing, and I like Dave the Diver, it's a good game, but Dave Diver, the controversy is that it's not a pure indie game, like you said, because it is financed by Nexon, which is a big Korean game corporation. And the point that Will and Bob Wolf tried to point out is that, well, you know, like, it should be about team size and not finances, because then, you know, if you look at, say, Shovel Knight, right, it made millions of dollars, so like anything that they fund will be there, so the funding shouldn't be a problem. I think that they're wrong. Can I just say that they're wrong? Because they're trying to say that once you make a lot of money from an indie studio, therefore your game is no longer indie, and it should be about team size. But I'd like to argue that, yeah, sure, but think about it this way. You making it as an adult, right? Who do you respect more? The person that made it out of, you know, let's say the ghettos of Philadelphia, someone like that. Like someone who made it out of like a bad home and made success for themselves, and they made their own money from their own hard work. Or do you respect the person that had a trust fund? It's like, how much can you say that, like, oh yeah, they made it on their own with their trust fund? You know, it's like, doesn't matter the team size. I think when we talk about pure indie game, if Low Birth Games, right, made a lot of money from this bet we made, let's just say they did, right, and they decided to make a second game, that game is still indie because they're using the funds from their previous game, you know? I don't know. I hated that argument that just like, no, like they make millions of dollars, so therefore it's still indie. And it's like, where the money came from. Yeah. If they made it from their own hard work, it's still indie no matter what.
Yeah.
But the argument for Dave the Diver is that they're getting a trust fund from Nexon. Yeah, you know?
That's not indie. Like, the team could be 50 strong. Yeah, the team could be 50 strong. And if it doesn't have a publisher, it's an indie game.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The minute, because like, that's why with Life is Strange is a very weird one. I've seen this in conversations. Like, funny enough, I was watching the Dead Meat channel. Have you ever seen Dead Meat on YouTube?
Yes.
He does like James A. Janisse. He does like a famous YouTube channel called Dead Meat, and he does a kill count series where he will like count kills in films and sometimes TV shows. But I don't know if he does TV shows. He's done famous horror films, but he did it on games recently because he was doing Mortal Kombat because of all the SAG strikes and stuff. And in that, he mentions Ashley Birch, because Ashley Birch is Cassie Cage in Mortal Kombat 11, 10X was Mortal Kombat X. She was Cassie Cage, Ashley Birch. And he says that, and he's like, and he kind of introduces things, does things better, more clarity, explanation. He says like, you know, this is Ashley Birch who plays Cassie Cage, and, you know, might know her from like, you know, Tiny Tina from Borderlands or from the indie game Life is Strange.
Yeah.
And I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah. Indie?
Yeah.
I was like, Life is Strange is not indie, but Life is Strange always had that reputation because it was like the Sundance film style game. But we've always said, like me and you, we've always asked, it's like, is it actually indie? It's not. It's a double A game, if anything. It's got Square Enix attached to it. Square Enix bankrolled that project because it had to. Like, Don't Nod didn't have the money from it. However, what Montreal's doing, Don't Nod is funding that. So it's there's a difference with this story. So with this bed we made, this is an independent game. This is pure indie. Yeah, this is pure indie. This is like, for me, feels like the quote, what we used to define as indie, like during the games that came out, like Limbo and Papers, Please, and like from different developers, you were kind of like, I was like, actually, this is kind of a little bit of a gem of a game.
That's an even better remark. Papers, Please. Like,
Lucas Pope?
Yes, thank you. Lucas Pope made so much money from Papers, Please. He used that funds to make The Return of Obra Dinn. So can you, like, you made millions of dollars. Is it no longer indie? Yes, because he made the money from his previous game. He worked hard, and therefore he could fund his own game. Nobody's publishing. I hated that argument so much when I was listening to it.
Yeah, it's a weird argument that they fought.
That was a stupid argument. So dumb.
I don't get that. I'm completely disagree with that argument. Like, this game is an indie game. Low birth games.
It should be about like where the funds are coming from, not about the team size, because. Yeah.
To give you context as well, because I haven't played the game that you said. Was it Dave the Diver?
Dave the Diver.
What an interesting name that is. Hypothetically speaking, with the bankrolling that game has, say if that game was nominated for the Game Awards as it has, and then this game was released a couple of months ago, This Bed We Made got critical acclaim from everywhere. Everyone picked it up, etc. And then this got overlooked. I'd be quite annoyed about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd be like, hang on a minute. This is an independent game from a very indie team.
That's the big controversy with the Game Awards, because just look up Game Awards indie games, right? So
by the way, there's a lot of controversy with those awards, because I don't agree with Resident Evil Remake being nominated for Game of the Year.
Yeah, but that's the other thing with Sea of Stars. They also made the argument on Wolf Den. They're like, oh, well, their previous game, they made a lot of money, so it's technically not indie. I'm like, no, that's I was like, no, that's not the same, dude. Because they made from their own hard work, that's how they made Sea of Stars, because they had their funds because of their hard work. Dave the Diver came to be because they had money from another company. It was a trust fund money. So stupid. It was a dumb, stupid argument. I hated it. But I love the Wolf Den podcast. But I hated that argument. Cocoon is nominated for Best Indie Game, which I believe is the same developers as Inside and Limbo. I'm pretty sure. I think Dave the Diver, which that's where the controversy is. Love the game, love Dave the Diver, but not an indie game. Dredge, which is indie, and Sabotage Studios with Sea of Stars and Viewfinder. So unfortunately, with this bed we made was not here, but like that it would be qualified for a nominee because it is pure. It is pure indie game.
I get with that category, I get the thing with the Game of the Year where games were missing out, like Final Fantasy 16 to Resident Evil Remake. Are you really? I'm like, I would not put Resident Evil 4 Remake for Game of the Year. No remake is ever Game of the Year for me. Because even if it's not a point-to-point scale and you've changed things, you still already have all the advantages. This is the same as a publisher bankrolling an indie game. It's like, it's not indie anymore. You got a leg up. It's like you got a leg up in life at that point. It's like, I'm sorry, but you haven't changed. I don't know.
By the way, Game of the Year is going to be in between Baldur's Gate 3 and Zelda. Like, it's straight up going to be between those two.
As it should. If Resident Evil 4 Remake won it, I'll be pretty annoyed. I love that game, by the way. I think it's great.
They also made that argument, same podcast. They said that, like, Resident Evil 2 being nominated, it was a remake, but it was so different from the first entry that like it could be nominated for Game of the Year because it was so different. But Resident Evil 4 is just upgraded. Like, it's literally just upgraded. There's nothing really changed. It's just an upgrade. Good upgrade. But it's just like, it's not Resident Evil 2 upgrade.
No. It's pretty much point to point with like certain couple of changes. It's like, for example, if they remade the first Life is Strange.
No.
I say this as well. They will remake it as well. Anyone listening, I've always said this as well.
They will.
That first Life is Strange is going to get remade by Square Enix. As much as you might not like it, but it's going to get remade. If it was like completely different and we mean like Arcadia Bay turned open world and they changed like all kinds of fragments of story, then it could be a Game of the Year contender for me.
I would switch out Resident Evil 4 with Hi-Fi Rush if I was honest about Game of the Year.
Anything should be on there instead of Resident Evil 4 for me. It should not be in Game of the Year for me. I'm sorry, like it feels like cruel because you might be overlooking what game developers are putting into time, effort, and stuff. I'm sorry, but it's just not an original. It's not Game of the Year at that point. Like, it's the same game. Like, that's because at that point I'd be like, why don't you just give Shinji Mikami the award at that point, because he made the original game.
Somebody was joking about there's a bunch of controversies this year about I guess we're talking a little bit about Game Awards here, but a lot of the best community support, a lot of these people have actually fired their community like managers. Like Bungie has had a bunch of layoffs, and Destiny 2 is including the community support for Bungie. CD Projekt Red had a lot of layoffs, including some of the community support. Square Enix, of course. So it's funny that best community support, and three out of the five have had major layoffs, including community support. So it's just funny in that way.
Yeah, it's
not
it's,
funny
yeah.
for job loss, but just nope. like the irony, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, the irony is where yeah. Square Enix is something else. Do you know when Forspoken was dropped to like £10 here on deal?
Oh, really?
Yeah, oof. And the funny part is as well, I swear as well, I saw this last weekend, I should have kept the tweet and I should have sent it to you. It was like a billboard for Forspoken that popped up somewhere. Mm. And it was like being marketed a year late, and it's like, then you wonder why Square Enix is such financial mishap. And it's like what they're doing as well. It's like, yeah, that kind of sums it up really, doesn't it? I'm not even taking digs at Forspoken. I just think it's ludicrous the budget that game had and the fact that it was actually like put into commission. But anyway, all that was interesting as it is, but yeah, in this bed we made.
Yes.
This gave me like very much 2015 vibes. So going back to like Life is Strange periods, the Council, games like that I really enjoyed. So I was kind of like quite pleased by it. It's very impressive, Adam, for an indie team to make something like this. It's very impressive, like visually and like, you know, the style, the art direction, the music, the storytelling. It is very impressive. I was quite taken aback by like what I was expecting. Like the main issue I found, if anything, on the PlayStation 5, there was a couple of moments of frame rate issues. So it would stutter here and there. But considering I recommended the Council to you and how many bugs are in that, you know, this is very forgiving. Okay, so I'm going to pick back up here. I don't know why I was up to. Siri had popped up my laptop and I just had a fight with it. And Adam got to listen to that. But with this bed we made, I was really impressed by the way that it looked. And there was a couple of frame rate issues I think I mentioned previously as well. Like that was the only thing that I noticed, which was a little bit kind of like bad, like quote unquote bad. And it was like something that was like a really small niggling issue. And well, as I said to you before, I played the Council, I recommended you the Council, and that was filled with bugs. But generally speaking, it just feels like a very I had expectations at first when I went to this thinking it'd be more horror-y, if anything. It's not really. I think that there was potential for it to be a horror game as well, because it has the kind of like feeling for it. And there could have been quite a few more creepy moments. Like,
have you played Gone Home?
Yes, I have.
Is it in that kind of light where it could have been horror, but like nothing really happens in that way? Okay.
Yeah.
That same vibe?
Yeah, that's the basically the same vibe. There were moments that you could easily creep someone out, if anything. I don't know if that was the direction of the game or not, but I feel like this could easily have like injected a couple of horror influences in it. Like, you know, even if it was like a door closing somehow or something in between, it would have creeped out of you. Well, basically, because like most of the game you spend it as a maid. You're the maid. You're cleaning out these rooms.
You're the maid.
Yes, you are a maid.
I don't think you mentioned that you're the maid.
Yes, you are a maid. I believe your name's Sophie.
Wait.
Yeah, just... Hey, I got cleaning props on this game. Like, you know, I'm like,
really?
Like flying. Yeah, I was like cleaning all these rooms, man.
Wait,
was,
you like, can actually get like scores on how you clean?
Oh yeah, it impacts you. Everything impacts you by the end of the game.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's got that Life is Strange formula, choice and consequence. It's all there, like entrenched in the game. It's like very different because like affects different points of the game and how you play out things. But like as Sophie, and you're like snooping through these rooms. She's a snoopy maid, which, as I said before, it feels like great for me as well, because I'm a chief snooper. But you're kind of like unraveling this mystery, and then I'll kind of like give you a little bit of the story, not to kind of spoil it. You play as Sophie, and you have an acolyte, so you have one person you partner with very early on in the game. So you can choose between the receptionist called Beth, and I believe it's another guy called Andrew, who's like a waiter there. I can't remember what his role is specifically. I've only played it once so far.
Okay.
and they partner with you. So they'll help you uncover this mystery that you've kind of like fallen into. And it is just outstanding. So I, for example, I played with Beth at the minute. And I said to Luke was talking to me on Twitter, I was like, Beth's like my spirit animal at the minute. She's just so cool. They wrote a really cool character. They positioned her in a really great place. Really great dialogue. And it's like the chemistry between the two characters works so well. And it's like, hey presto, this is a winning thing. But overall, yeah, I think with this game, it's like they're going to really have to rely on people to promote it and get out there and like do a word of mouth thing, because unfortunately, like, you know, the market is so busy as it is with like people buying games, and especially in the holiday season as well. But really enjoyed it as well. And do you know what, as well, when we talk about indie vibe, and you were saying it before in the conversation, there was an entire thing on the main menu screen which surprised me. In the top right corner, it says,
"Oh yeah,
thank you for buying our game. This means the world to us. And we have a Discord channel. You can scan our code, you can come to it and tell us if there's any bugs, and also come over there and say hello." And I've never seen that before in a game. Me personally, I can't remember the last time I've ever seen a game where it's like that kind of like authentic. And it's like, you can tell it's not like a, you know, oh, it's a throwaway kind of message. It's like an actual message from the developer side. And I was like, this actually feels quite like nice to see that these developers have acknowledged the consumer who's buying your game, and they know where they're at in terms of being an indie studio. And I thought it was just like a nice little touch, and it's just something that caught my eye straight away when I opened the menu screen. But yeah, as I said, great that. And even as well, music, Adam, as well, I said to you, the music's great as well. The soundtrack is just for me, because like when you drop your Christmas single, not to promote anything here, when you drop your Christmas single and you kind of like were telling me about the kind of like inspiration behind it, you showed me the archive footage you were going through, and you're like picking out and being like, I want to put this in the song and stuff. Obviously, this is like a 1950s game, so the music is like, you know, oh, it's just like, it's soothing. It's like, it's contextualizing its period. And to give a shout out to Samuel Desrosiers, I hope I said your name right. I'm so sorry if I haven't.
I can't even pronounce it.
Who made the soundtrack for it. I think it's great. It really hits the beats. Like, it has those moments where it like starts picking up. It helps like accompany scenes. It like, for me, it makes like even Beth's scenes even more funnier when she's talking. Well, like there's this kind of like nice tempo upbeat, and it contextualizes the game. Like, you know, you're set in this period of like the 1950s in this massive hotel. It's like, I'm really enjoying this. And yeah, by the end of the game, your choices start to unravel, and it's like you kind of start seeing the effects of it. And I was impressed, and I would personally recommend it to a lot of people. I think if you like Life is Strange, and there's always a conversation where people are like, oh, recommend me Life is Strange inspired game and stuff, this is one to pick up.
Okay.
This is one to definitely pick up.
And he said it's kind of like LA Noir as well. Like Life is Strange, LA Noir / Gone Home.
That's how I see it. It's like LA Noir meets Life is Strange meets Gone Home. I hope they put that on the poster as well. You feel free to use that as a quote if you want.
Yeah.
But it has that kind of vibe with it. It's like a very much a mystery thriller. It has great mechanics in there as well. It's obviously, again, like tipped by Life is Strange with inspiration from it. I wish that there would have been a bit more horror, if anything. That's what I kind of wanted a little bit. But it's a deep thriller. And it's steadily paced as well. And you kind of, as I said, you kind of like do all this stuff in between it. And it's like you pick up these, it throws you at curve. And also, actually, here's one more thing as well. I actually kind of need to forget this. You need to read. You need to read in the game.
Oh, yeah. One of those.
It's a reading game. Like, basically, outside of like four or five characters, you don't meet a lot of people. Even like the guests that you're investigating and stuff like that, you don't meet them in person.
So it's like you're basically like Clue in that way.
Oh yeah, actually that's a very good shout as well. I forgot about Clue. Clue's a good, it's like that. It's like that. You're basically piecing things together. You're learning about these people. You're understanding things, and it's like now you're putting things together. And also as well, one more thing as well. If you've got really bad and slow awareness like I do for clues, it'll stump you.
Okay.
At points, because some of the puzzles are like, I was kind of like close to hitting my head against the wall, and that's not on their fault. It's because of me. It was like blonde haired moment I was having where I was like, I can't believe what I'm doing here. What am I doing? It's like, what? It's like stuck like 2 hours, like not 2 hours, like 30 minutes, like trying to figure out something. And it was like literally right in front of me. And I was like, how did I miss this? How did I miss this? And it's
I really wish this was on Switch though. Seems like a perfect Switch game.
It is. I hope that they release it on Switch. It's made for Switch, by the way. I think, like, obviously it's on Steam, for example. So if you have a Steam Deck, great to carry around. And I think if you have a Switch, it'd be perfect game for it. It'd work. It'd flow so well on it. But it's cool nonetheless. And I find it quite interesting as well. Like, I was thinking about this recently. Life is Strange was inspired by so many things. Do you know, like, is it Twin Peaks? Twin Peaks, all the other, like, cultural references that they have in Life is Strange, like Luke and Michelle, and Raoul and Jean-Luc and everyone else from Don't Know How. However, like, now Life is Strange is becoming, like, the kind of, like, inspiration for a lot of other games. So it's, like, it's all those, like, previous games. Like, you think as well, like, in our life as well, like, Halloween was released in 1978 now, and we're in 2023.
Yeah.
Like, when I was growing up, it's like Halloween was only like 10, 15, 20 years old. Now it's like, you know, we're well far out there now. Like, we're 40 years away from that. Yeah. It's like, they feel like distant memories, but yeah, they were the kind of like catalyst to inspire things. It's like now Life is Strange is a catalyst inspiring future games. And you can see with these guys. And when I say these guys, universal plural for everyone at the studio.
British as well. Yeah, it's gotta be a great honor to be always referenced in games. Like, it's... right now, like, again, going back to Dave the Diver, they say, like, oh, but I took a harpoon to the knee, you know, it's just like, there's that Skyrim reference, but then you know you've made it, like, a real impact on video games when you're being referenced in other games, you know, like, it's real, that's gotta be a cool feeling, too, you know?
Does it make you feel old, by the way? Because it makes me feel old.
I'm always feeling old, dude. I get out of bed and I hear cracks, so I feel old.
Yeah, that's the same with me. But yeah, as I said, recommend...
While we're recording this, talk about feeling old. Today, as we're recording this, by the way, this is the 18th. The Game Boy Color is 25 years old. The Game Boy Color is 25 years old, dude.
I can't.
Yeah, it's 25, I can't do it, dude. Man.
Do you know, like, because I've seen those, like, you know, like, a couple of years ago where it's, like, kids react to something on, like, YouTube. And they did one with the Game Boy where they're trying to figure out how to, like, put the cartridge in or blowing into it and stuff. And, like,
how does
it work? But after I sent you the TikTok about the Taylor Swift CD and the kids were trying to pull out the CD from the case, I've never felt more old in my entire life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 25 years to the Game Boy. Like, that's just... I was talking about the original Game Boy, not Game Boy Color, the gray brick.
No,
one.
The original Game Boy is older. I'm talking Game Boy Color.
Oh, Game Boy Color. Oh, what a console.
Yeah. Yeah. Game
Boy Color.
You know
what, as well? Anyone listening, I remember as a young child, remember going into a Curry store, which is in the UK. It's like an electronics store. Going in there, and on the wall, there were Game Boys and Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue, like in cardboard boxes. Those were the times to be alive when everything was more colorful and not drab and boring, which it feels like it is now. Those are the times to be alive. But yeah, thank you for making me feel old, though. That is quite the anniversary as well.
I was about to say, 25, dude.
Game Boy, man. What's your favorite Game Boy Color, like, before we go on?
I don't want to be like that guy and just say Pokemon Yellow. But it's like, oh, man, Pokemon Crystal, though. Like, the music. Yeah. Like, and I understand that Pokemon Crystal is Gold and Silver combined, and that's why I'm picking it, because it's best of both worlds. But Pokemon Crystal? Oh, man, I don't want to be basic in that way, because, like, I loved Pokemon Crystal. Like, that was my game.
I think Pokemon Crystal is great. It's one of those three for me. Like, Gold,
I have
Crystal,
it on vinyl, dude. Like, I have I have the soundtrack on vinyl, cool. Dude. I can't think of a better game, like, off the top of my head.
I think that Crystal theme hits more because they did the entire Suicune arc, and it made it a little bit more kind of, like, story-based than that. But no, I'd say it's a good choice. Mine would be Pokemon Gold, Silver, or Crystal. It's one of them. They were seminal moments. Kids, today, you do not understand how great that game was. That was that was when I peaked as well at that point. But yeah, we'll leave this here. That's all our new segments anyway. And again, as well, go and check out This Bed We Made. It's on PlayStation 5. It's on Steam, maybe on Xbox. You might need to check that out. We need to.
It's listed on Wikipedia. Or on the internets as it. So it might be, like, false. But again, I'm not on my Xbox right now, so I haven't checked the actual store, but I checked the website and I checked my Xbox app. It's not listed.
Maybe it's delayed.
It might be delayed, yeah. But It is definitely on Steam, and it's definitely on PlayStation, and it's only 25 quid.
25
it's quid, like bucks.
That's in, pound.
In, yeah, but like, if I say like dollars and bucks, well, like, what is a quid? Like, what's a quid? So, like,
oh, I don't even know how to explain this. I mean, it would be the equivalent of a dollar.
Yeah. So like, yeah. 25 quid would be the same as 25 pounds.
$25. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, it's like, oh, it's 25 bucks. You know, yeah. Bucks being dollar. So, okay. Yeah. It's 25 quid or 25 bucks, you know.
Man, I don't know how you work your currency. I remember when I went to the States once, and I was like, just, I had no idea. I was like, even to it's the cashier, oh. I was like, how do you explain these? Like, I tried to remember which one's which, and she just cut, started laughing. I was like, I'm like, completely lost here. It's like, I want to go home.
Oh, talk about Canadian money, dude. Like, since we're on the Montreal... Canadians, if you're watching this, your money is whack, dude. They have loons. They have
what?
Loons, dude. Like, okay, we're going on a side tangent here. Canadian money names. Yeah, they have I'm not kidding you, Adnan, when I say this. Will you believe me when I say this? That they have a loony and a toonie. They have a loony and a toonie.
And a toonie.
Yes. A loony is a buck or a quid, and a toonie is two, I believe. Yeah.
What
like a
the...
loony. Yeah, like their bucks, their dollars is loonies. Can we get that? Can we check on that country over there? Over in Canada?
That like, is what a... the?
Yeah.
That
loonies
quite,
and toonies.
Loonies and toonies.
Yeah.
What wild place.
Yeah. No, Canada's a wild place, dude. It's wild. I've been to Montreal. I've been to Toronto. It's wild over there.
I can confirm there's no loonies and toonies in this bed we made. That is set in Montreal, that game. So it's like there's no loonies and toonies.
There's no loonies or toonies. Okay.
No. But I would like to go to Canada at some point. I want to get some poutine, but that's the only reason I mainly go.
Oh, I've had poutine. It's quite good.
Yeah. That's what I mean. So, yeah. Adam, should we go to our main topic?
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
But before that as well, Adam, one more thing, and you've responded to this comment as well. I thought I'd just flag something from one of our listeners. It was quite interesting as well. So this was from @BumblyBree on YouTube.
Bumbly.
I love that username, by the way, as well. Yeah. Who
I'm
responded to our last video. Who responded to our last... I love the photo that they've got for their YouTube channel as well. That's quite nice as well. Nice little bit. Anyway, Bumbly Bree responded to our video that we had in our last conversation on the last podcast. And I just wanted to read out, and it's quite interesting
as
well.
Oh, yes, yes, this one.
Yeah, I need to respond, and hopefully I've responded by the time this episode's come out. Yeah. And I read it as well when I did. They put, awesome vid. I'm listening to this discussion about Gen Z playing the game right now. Lol, I'm Gen Z. And playing the game, and I related the most with Chloe because of how I can relate to the loss she had and how anger and flippancy can be easiest way to cope. The punk aesthetic has always been my thing, so immediately was drawn to her. Also, I don't like David, especially when I saw him smack Chloe, but I never thought he was the big bad, just a jackass. I can't remember who I thought it was, but I didn't think it was David. That may be because I practiced writing scripts in my free time, so I could see them waving in my face from a mile away.
Yeah.
End comment. So I just wanted to give Bumbly Bree a shout there, because as I said, we kind of asked for people from Gen Z to give us a perspective, yeah. And that is quite interesting as well to hear that, and also from their background of being a script writer as well, and noticing.
Yeah, and I said,
like
I was like, well, you're cheating because you're you're already becoming like a great screenwriter. It's like, oh yeah, well I already know. It's just like, well yeah, I'm a musician, so I can see where an album's going, but it's like, you can't just say that. Like, just because you're the next Quentin Tarantino, you can't just say that.
But no, interesting. I think some of that stuff that they mentioned, Bumbly Bree, in there, you kind of like alluded to as well. About how Chloe had been seen by Dave Madsen. But yeah, thank you for that comment though as well. As I said before as well, you know, drop comments on our YouTube videos. We'll read them out in the episodes. We've done fan topics of people who have submitted stuff. So please engage with us. We'd like to put faces to listeners. It's always nice for us to know people.
Yes.
Anyway, main topic, Adam.
Yes.
So I pitched Adam that, and this has been like done to death, but anyway, But I said to him, I was like, who would be on the faces, the four faces of Mount Rushmore for Strangecast? Mm. Yeah. Who would Strangecast put on the Mount Rushmore of Life is Strange characters? Now, this kind of starts off with anything. I've said this to Adam as well. Like, Mount Rushmore is a weird thing to kind of define to people, because I've seen it with, like, you know, sports questions. I've done, like, interviews where I've asked people, it's like, who are the four greatest, like, sports athletes you put on your Mount Rushmore? Mount Rushmore isn't the four greatest presidents.
Like, yes.
It's not.
I looked it up. I was like, why are faces there on Rushmore? I live in America and I don't know this. I live above the state where Rushmore is. I don't know it. They represented the most important events in history of the United States.
Yeah. So I think, like, we kind of said that as well before podcast, that we try and define what our Mount Rushmore consists of people. And then we can, like, pick our characters that would go on that as well. I think it's easy to kind of, like, avoid having, like, four people of the main characters and be like, we're done with this conversation, ending it. But I think, like, it depends on how you define it, what that is it on the lines of, like, the actor's performance that puts them on there? Is it, like, their cultural relevance in the story? Is it their long-lasting impact on fans? I think there's so many, like, factors to kind of equate into a conversation for a Life is Strange Mount Rushmore. And I kind of said to Adam as well, it might be nice for us to name our individual ones, and then we obviously reveal who would be on Strangecast's Mount Rushmore. And unfortunately, we both have to agree who goes on Mount Rushmore for Strangecast as well. So we can't have a fight about that. Do you want to go first, or do you want to, like, kind of bounce off each other, like, reveal one face that we have each?
Here's my first question.
Okay.
And this is the pre-discussion. Will any True Colors characters be on a Rushmore?
That's the tough question. That is probably the toughest question.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the thing. Just like, will any True Colors
I think.
Yeah.
If not on there, has to be in contention for a conversation. And it's probably because it's Steph at this point.
Yes.
I think just because of, like, the way that she's been positioned in the story so far, her relevance outside of the games, her performance, obviously. You know, we've seen, like, the last couple of, like, you know, months that we've been covering Life is Strange, years and stuff like that. They've kind of, like, done prose novels, they've done comics. I think she's the one that stands out personally. That would probably be the one that'd be in contention. Does she get onto it? That's the different conversation.
Yes.
But I think that's a very good question. I think, personally speaking, True Colors is the one that is the most questioning. And I think, like, this conversation would be revisited, for example, if, like, Deck Nine made a sequel to True Colors and brought Alex Chen back. Then there'd be a conversation where Alex Chen comes into the conversation to be on Mount Rushmore for Life is Strange. But personally speaking, I think it's just Steph at the minute from that game. Would you agree with me?
It would be Steph. And Steph is kind of like, well, Steph would be in that same light as, you know, going into two different games as my first choice in my Rushmore. So
here we go.
My first choice is Rachel Amber.
Yes. Straight up. Let's just, like, can we just put all her four faces on there? Like, in this conversation,
honestly, we'll, like, I have to say Rachel Amber has to be that first face on Rushmore, because if the rules of Rushmore is that they represent the most important events, right? Rachel Amber not only represents Before the Storm, right, with Chloe's, you know, growing into who Chloe is, but she is the main reason why Life is Strange is happening. Like, it's the only reason why, like, we're solving this mystery with Life is Strange is that Rachel Amber, where is Rachel Amber? And that's the whole premise of Life is Strange. So if we're going to talk about, you know, important events in the history of Life is Strange, my first face has to be Rachel Amber.
Yeah. I think you've hit the nail.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I will say as well, like, one of my faces was her. If my, on my personal, it would be, I've always said that she's my favorite character.
Yeah.
I think, like, with the way that she's positioned in the first game, she's the catalyst that starts that story. I think the way that Don't Not Tell Her, if anything, is quite interesting as a story premise.
Yes.
Like, this, the kind of mystique with her. Then, obviously, we see Rachel Amber in Before Storm. And whatever you think about Before Storm, I think that character has done really well in that game. There are things that I wish that could have been changed or altered, but obviously great. Exceptional performance, obviously, from Kylie Brown. I don't think I could ever unhear someone else playing that character. Yeah. I think like that was that's like a lifetime casting. That's like, you know, Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine or Hannah Tell playing Max Caulfield. I think like that is defined by whoever's playing that person. I don't think I could ever see anyone play that character otherwise. So exceptional performance. Relevance in the story is like, you know, says about with her relationship with Chloe. I think that that defined a lot. And even her relationship with Max, even though we don't see it in the games, it's there because she's the conduit, as I've always said, between Max, Chloe and herself. Like, you know, there's always a kind of, her relationship is defined by how Max perceives her and how things map out. And then even as well, as I said to you before, the comics as well, the comics give even more depth towards what Rachel Amber is and how her relationship would map out with Max. I think that's always been the fascination. Returns in True Colors as well, briefly for a cameo, has another appearance in it. But I think, yeah, personally speaking for me, I think she's one of the most intriguing characters I've seen in the series. There's so many like what ifs, who she is, how she is. I think that kind of like gives me just, I think like she comes across as like, you know, the American girl next door, kind of like the kind of girl you'd expect in a high school, like the kind of like the popular girl who's like this and that and everything else in between it. And then is completely different when you kind of like see her and the way that she behaves and the way that she acts and this kind of like free spirit. I love the free spirit side of her. I think that's the one thing that's always caught me back. Because I think maybe it's like, I've always wished I could be spontaneous and free spirited, even if it's like very destructive as well, depending on who you see it as. But I think like that's why I've always kind of appealed with her, the way she's so free spirited with like everything she does. It's so spontaneous. But then there's also questions about who she hurts whilst being around and what she does and the impact that it has and the gravity of the situation. You could easily spin off a story with her with more, you know, more content, especially with the things that happen prior to the disappearance, etc. But kind of, it's also unnecessary. But yeah, I think she's like one of my faces personally. That would be one of the characters I would pick. Should we just put her on there?
Yeah, that's going to be face number one.
Yeah, we'll annoy a lot of people at that. I know some people who hate her. But
here's a spoiler alert for upsetting people. Max and Chloe are not going to be my faces. They're not going they're not going to be on here. Nope.
That is controversial.
They're not going to be on Rushmore, dude.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, because like if we're talking about, again, we're talking about the history of what a Rushmore rule is. Like they represent the events, not necessarily like the greatest presidents of all time. I'm talking about the events occurring. And my second face is actually going to like make people go on a roller coaster of just like, oh, and then, oh, okay.
I regret suggesting this topic now. Go on.
But my second face is actually going to be Daniel Diaz.
Daniel Diaz, ooh, that's a very interesting one.
Because here's the thing, is that we're talking about the events. If I'm talking about Rachel being the event, the catalyst of what Life is Strange 1 is, and the catalyst of Before the Storm, I'm going to talk about a catalyst of Life is Strange 2. Like, none of Life is Strange 2 would happen if Daniel didn't have like that power freak out when he was just trying to defend everybody. It wouldn't have happened if his father didn't get shot, which you could have said like Esteban should have been on that face. But the whole catalyst of how Life is Strange 2 progresses is through Daniel Diaz, and even the ending is how Daniel Diaz grows up and becomes a more of a man, you know. I will say that in terms of the rules of Rushmore, I'm going to say that so far I have Rachel Amber and Daniel Diaz.
That's an interesting shout as well. I never thought you'd put Daniel Diaz on that.
Yeah.
Never thought that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you mentioned that, because I feel like Daniel does seem to get forgotten a lot. Well, Life is Strange 2 gets forgotten a lot by Square Enix. But I think like with Daniel, though, I've always found it, some people found him really annoying. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a young kid.
He's a kid. Yeah. Like, of course he's annoying. Have you ever been around kids? They're annoying.
Yeah. They're like, I mean, like, yeah, they're just completely annoying. But it's like, his position in the story, I feel like his performance gets forgotten about a lot and gets slept on. Roman George did very well in that performance, like very, very well. Like he was so good with what he was doing as well. But I think what you said was really interesting as well. I think like with his place in the story, what he does, I think his focus is obviously detracted by the other Diaz brother that we'll come on to anyway. Yes. But I think like, yeah, I think like he's a very interesting shout to have on there as well. I didn't even think about that, to be honest. But yeah, it's, I think like with his character, I wish there was, obviously there was more time with him sometimes. Or like, even if, for example, you could have like had a moment where like, you know, where Sean's like knocked out because of the aftermath of the third episode and you take control of Daniel briefly for something in the beginning of the next episode. That would have been quite interesting. Not even just to use his powers, but more in the sense of just seeing it from his perspective. I think maybe it would have grounded things from other people a bit more. But no, yeah, that's a very interesting thing. Should I flip it onto mine then?
Yeah, go for it.
Because obviously, like, I'll be the opposite, which was my second pick would have been Sean.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because I think, like, I think, like, Sean Diaz is, like, his story is so seminal. I think that game is, like, I think, like, Life is Strange 2 is driven on one of those two faces. So it's either Sean or Daniel. And it's, and I think you attach yourself and relate yourself to two different people. Because I know how you feel about Chris, obviously, from Captain Spirit and Life is Strange 2. You kind of attach yourself to certain characters. And I think with Sean, it's like such a powerful story. Like, obviously, and I've said this before, you know, Gonzalo Martin probably did the best performance in the entire series, I'd probably say. Because, like, I've always said this as well, go and look at who he competed with in the BAFTA category, which he won. He beat, like, Norman Reedus. He beat Laura Bailey. He beat, like, a lot of people, man. Like, I don't think anyone gave him, like, a real shot in that category outside of, like, Life is Strange fans. But, yeah, he did it, and he also deserved it as well. Like, that was the most BAFTA-worthy performance winning of, like, maybe even the last decade, at least.
Yeah.
And it was, like, really, like, he really grounded himself in that character of Sean Diaz. But, like, I think it's the story of Sean there, which is, like, the struggle, the adversity, like, being the bigger brother, like, you know, being on the run from what's happened, losing his father. I think, like, you basically have those moments for me where it's like, it's more touching because it's like Sean has that relationship with his brother, which gets defined, but then he gets his relationship defined with his father and his mother. So obviously, as I've said before, you have those great scenes where Esteban turns up, is talking to Sean. You kind of like get these like philosophical life lessons from like a lost father. But then it's like the rekindlingness of his mother with Karen. Yes. And they have had those great scenes like when they're outside the motel and Karen's smoking and he's smoking. And like there's a predefined relationship between them. So it's like I would personally go for Sean at that point. Because I think he's just a really, really complex, well-written, engaging character, endearing character. And then on top of that, you get to define him throughout the entire game. So obviously his love interests which have like a relevance into his experience. You get a chance to kind of like build his relationship with Daniel the way that you see it. And then also just to see his story and how he progresses as a human being, I think that's quite the the story with it. So I think like he for me is like the one that I have. And maybe we can revisit this face if you want afterwards.
Well, can we make like a weird mutated face where it's both the faces combined as the Diaz brothers?
Maybe we should choose a dog and put him on there as like a Pompidou. You know, Pompidou. Put Pompidou on like on there instead, like as a kind of like a nod to.
Let's go.
Ode to the series.
Yeah, not mushroom Pompidou. Let's go.
I think personally, we leave that. We'll come back to that one because I think that will be the one we have to settle. I personally, just to put it out there, I think personally, a Diaz brother has to be on there.
Yeah,
which one is something?
Sean, just because like while Daniel has the powers, right? Life is Strange 2 flipped the script where you're not playing as the one with powers. You're playing as the one without, and you have to carry the load of guilt, and you have to carry the load of grief with everything because you're not even telling Daniel until episode 2? Mm-hmm. Wait, was that episode 2 or episode 1? It was episode 1.
Episode 1, yeah. So right at the end of episode 1, yeah.
Yeah, so... I would have to say, yeah, Sean. So far, Rachel and Sean.
I'm surprised you gave up on Daniel.
Well, it's like Daniel is just like, he might be the catalyst, but at the same time, Sean is the one taking on the events, you know?
Yeah. It's a hard one, though, because I think like that would kind of be the interesting perspective to put on Max and Chloe. If you like decide between one of them, like who goes on there, and then it's like actually this is a very difficult one then to decide on that.
Okay,
let's start with Sean. I might actually change my opinion later on. I'm kind of like thinking that with Daniel now. Do you want to go for your third face, or do you want me to reveal my third face?
I'll reveal my third.
Okay.
Angry Bald Man from True Colors.
Oh, that's... Come on.
There's no reason. I just want him on there. Angry Bald Man.
I would want Hot Dog Man on there.
Like... Hot Dog Man. I was actually going to say Kate Marsh.
Really?
Kate Marsh. Yeah, straight up. Just because that was... And we're talking about important events. Like, that was... One of the most important events of all the Life is Strange games is like episode 2, where he's saving Kate Marsh from the building. Like, think about any other event like it, right? Like an important keystone event within the Life is Strange series, and that's saving her, you know, was like a big role into that, you know. So I would say, in that way, I would say Kate Marsh is on my third.
That's very interesting. By the way, as well, because like obviously for listeners, this is not the greatest, by the way, because like we had to like predefine this on other requisites. Because obviously, if it's greatest, we'd be like Max, Chloe, Rachel, and like Sean, and see you later. Like, enjoy the episode. Like, that would be like that would be the conversation. So obviously, it's easy to like gravitate towards the main characters. Kate Marsh is a very interesting one. I didn't think you'd put her on that. And in itself, actually, that might actually be an interesting choice, especially with the novel that's coming out next year as well.
Yes, exactly.
With like that's kind of like it was quite interesting for Square Enix to make that decision to come back as well and bring her there. Obviously, we love Day as well, so it's like, you know, we can't like go wrong with Day. But she did play a very good part in that second episode. Interesting choice. Well, my third choice was, and very close to Kate Marsh actually in terms of person. It was obviously one of my favorite characters and someone who I think was like a big staple in the series and really shut himself out. It was Dave Madsen.
I was actually going to, you know what? I was actually going to say Dave Madsen in my third. But I was just like, I wasn't sure if I should put him on. But so, I was actually going to between Kate Marsh and Dave.
Yeah, Dave's an interesting one. Like, even if you kind of talk about the story, you kind of like get rid of him and like not be that phase with him. But I think it's the way that they built his arc. Across like, and it was across three separate games they built his arc. Three separate games they built his arc. Two different studios who tackled him, and the interpretation they gave him as well. Yeah, and like Dave Madsen kind of was like, I always say that when we get to Angry Ponytail Day, Ponytail Day by the time of the second episode, second Life is Strange. Sorry, I think people love him at that point. I think it's the one character I look at thinking like, your arc has been completed there. Like, your arc has been like nailed so well. Like, you went from being angry step douche, kind of character that people didn't like because like the way that he related to Chloe and the way he acted and what he was doing, and he was like this massive red herring. Obviously we forgive him his his pathetic attempt at pushing a table at Jefferson in that dark room segment, because that was deeply embarrassing for Dave. But then it's like, I think like for me, I think the way he's positioned the second game, that's what always gets me. It's like he's kind of come to this point of like acceptance of like a tranquility kind of state of who he is, like his relationship with Chloe or Max, and depending on like what decision you pick. I was really strongly attached to Dave Madsen. I really felt like they redefined that character completely well. The performances, obviously, you know, from Dan and like from Dom McManus. I think like, you know, the two actors who played him as well across those three games, they really nailed him. They really defined him. They really made him feel like a character. You're like, oh, actually, this was worth it. The story that we're getting told from Dave Madsen, and in itself as well, the reception. I remember when people saw Dave Madsen turn up in Life is Strange 2, and they're like, oh, it's Dave. And it's like everyone's kind of like changed their opinion. It's like, it's interesting how you've like flipped the perspective of people. Maybe not as impactful on the story, per se. I think like his only real thing would be that he saved Max, if anything.
Yes.
In the dark room, but like, yeah, I have a strong affection to Dave. I think like he's very he's a very good choice as half. Let's come back to that, actually. I think Kate with Dave is a very interesting one to come back to. Number four. Do you want to go?
I'll let you go first, because I'm not sure mine yet.
Oh, no. okay. So my final one would have to be Chloe Price.
Okay.
So, like, this kind of, like, obviously, like, what we're talking about as well. We talked about, like, you know, like, two episodes ago, like, is Max the GOAT? She is the GOAT. She's the greatest of all time for me, the character in the entire series. Like, she's the top tier. Yeah, in the kind of conversation we're having here about, like, the impact, you couldn't put Rachel Amber on there and then not have Chloe Price on there. I think as important Max is as the protagonist of the first game, she's not as important as Chloe Price in the series overall. Like, okay. Chloe's story is like, because the first Life is Strange game is built like a coming of age story. The coming of age story of Max reuniting with Chloe, growing older, etc. However, Chloe is positioned as much more sometimes as well in that game as like the protagonist as well. Sometimes she's like the dual protagonist or the dual, like, you know, not the protagonist, the dual main character. Yet you don't control her, yet she has so much influence and impact on the trajectory of the story. Like, you're basically roped into this game to start with because of what's happened to Rachel Amber, and you only know Rachel Amber because of Chloe Price. That's the only reason you know of her. And it's like, when you have Chloe, for example, like, you basically see this character, like, we had that entire conversation in the last episode about, you know, bad friend, toxic debate, etc., all that kind of spiel that other people think. The interpretation of Chloe is defined, I think, personally by how you've lived your life and how you see people. I think it's a big prerequisite. I think, like, when people have, like, lost and experienced something like that, you'll understand Chloe. You'll understand her pain. You'll understand her anger. You'll understand a lot about her. But then maybe if you haven't experienced that and you've not experienced the fact of, like, losing a friend or a father or something like that, you kind of, like, is she for real? Like, why is she angry? Why is she just doing like that? It's like, she's just being obnoxious. She's just manipulating Max. She's manipulating Rachel. She's doing this. She's doing that. So, for me, she's really significant in the story. She plays a central part of it. Obviously, you know, an unbelievable performance for Ashley Birch, who then shot off to superstardom in the video game industry after that. But then it's like, we have that, and then also we have the story that's then defined in Before the Storm, and that gives it more contextual reason of, like, who she is. Then on top of that, you have, obviously, Farewell as well, which kind of gives you even more reason about who she is. I think she just jumps a lot in terms of, like, the way you perceive things. You basically see her from a young child all the way up to rebellious punk rock Chloe. I think, like, that kind of, like, makes you, like, it constantly changes your mind. I think some people are fixed in this mindset where it's like, you don't like her or you like her, etc. And then on top of that as well, the final decision in the first game is built around Chloe. And isn't it funny how many people choose to save one person over a town?
I pick Pompidou over Chloe.
Well,
I pick Pompidou.
What if the dog got killed anyway before that? You could have thrown the stick on the road.
No, because, like, he's in the funeral. So it's like, I'm saving the dog.
Yeah, but you missed the cut DLC content from the director's cut, which showed me getting a car and running over Pompidou. The dog.
I pick Pompidou every time. Every time. I'll kill Chloe, like, three times if I have to. I'll be in that junkyard just, like, ricocheting the bullet to Chloe if it means getting Pompidou back.
So, before you get onto yours anyway...
Yes.
Why did you leave Max and Chloe off? And did you have any consideration of putting one of them on before you decided? No.
I don't put them on because they're not really important events. The events happen to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they are not necessarily the events, necessarily. If we're talking about, and I know, like, the rules of Rushmore, saying that the presidents were the events, but they... And I guess you could say that, like, they represented the events. So I guess you could say Max and Chloe represented the events. But I think they were more the vessels of what was happening around them. But what I'm thinking is that, like, who are these people making the events, right? And that's why I don't think Max and Chloe are on my Rushmore in that way. I think they're more of just, like, things are happening to them rather than being the events. Which is why I know what my fourth one is actually William Price.
Ooh.
William Price would be in that rule book of just, like, things are happening to Chloe William is the reason why Chloe is the way she is. You know, we wouldn't have Chloe Price without the events of William. And that was defined by episode four. Thank you, brain, of Life is Strange, you know, whereas William Price surviving changed Chloe for a dramatic sense. So I'm going to say my fourth one in terms of like the important events that happened within the Life is Strange universe, both in Before the Storm and Life is Strange, is that William Price.
I didn't even think about that. I love William Price as well. Oh
yeah.
Yeah, because again, like this isn't the greatest characters like that. But that's the thing with Mount Rushmore as well. I've seen it with like, you know, because obviously I work in journalism, and they're always like, "Who are the four Mount Rushmores? Who are the four faces of your Mount Rushmore in like boxing or like mixed martial arts or football?" There's no like defined prerequisite they give people, so it's like they basically just assume it's like, oh, the greatest people they've played with or whoever they've done something with. It's not necessarily that. Mount Rushmore is completely different. The entire premise of Mount Rushmore is different, especially the one that you're building off, obviously, as Adam explained at the beginning of this segment. William Price is a very good shout, though. I can't believe I even forgot about him as well. It's a great performance as well by Joe Ackman in the first Life is Strange, and then the actor who replaced him in the first three episodes Before the Storm. And then even in Farewells, we get that little recording as well from him. Oh, yeah. He's so good as well, man. Like, I love his like scenes when Max is like younger and he's like interacting with her, and then even with Chloe as well. And then even when Max goes through time and revisits her. Oh God.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
He would go ahead of Chloe. I think he'd have to go on top of that. On top of that face then. So currently there's Rachel, Sean, and William. That's that on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
And then there's one spot open, and you currently have Kate Marsh. I currently have Dave Madsen. Mm-hmm. Max and Chloe are not on this, which is a fury of a lot of people. One for you as well. Why is Steph not here for you? You asked me very early on in the beginning of this conversation if anyone from True Colors would be on here.
She really isn't a catalyst of events. She's a good character in the same way that Max and Chloe are good characters. But like, what does Steph really do in terms of progressing the story and progressing events? Steph is merely a really good, well-written character, but nothing really because of her happens, right? We get a love triangle, that's about it, you know? We get a really good character, but nothing more than that. I mean, it's in the same way of like, why isn't... Drew North, like on here, you know, he's a really well character, including Mikey. Mikey's a really good character too, but like nothing really happens because of them, but they are within the realm of things happening to them. But I don't think Steph is a catalyst in the story.
I think Steph could be on that had they got rid of the love triangle in True Colors and then used her in the same way that Chloe or Rachel Amber is used on Alex. I think that
I'd say even more. Like, if we're gonna go in True Colors, it's gonna be Gabe. Gabe is the reason why Steph is there. Gabe is the reason why the town is so upset. Gabe is the reason why, you know, a lot of people are there in that town, you know, including his sister. I would say, like, if we're gonna do a True Colors one, it's gonna be Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, that I think kind of technically you have to throw Gabe into the conversation now as well with Dave Madsen and Kate Marsh.
Yeah, which is why, like, while Steph is a good character, she's not the catalyst like Gabe is, you know.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. So Rachel Amber, Sean Diaz, and William Price currently.
Yes.
And then I think the last three kind of have to be settled down to Dave Madsen, Kate Marsh, and Gabe Chen.
Yes.
I will withdraw Dave Marsh now. Dave Madsen. I think we'll withdraw him. Because I think in the conversation of things, he would be on a personal favorite or greatest interpretation. I think he can't be on this one then for the time being.
Yeah.
So he's out. But however, I think the new challenger arrives, which is Gabe Chen, and challenges Kate Marsh at this point for that spot. Now, where do you stand on these two? Because, like,
name me a better event, a more memorable event than Kate Marsh's event.
Yeah, it's hard, that, isn't it?
Name me like a much more memorable event within all the Life is Strange series than Kate Marsh's.
I mean, there's that confrontation between Chloe and that creepy guy that's following around. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
No, there isn't really. There isn't really.
That's the most memorable event.
Because, like, even if, for example, you could have, even if, for example, the argument would have been where in Before the Storm, where Chloe and Rachel kiss under the lamp and under the lamp in the street.
Yes.
You could technically say that Chloe would have to go on the Mount Mushroom, because if that wasn't a choice and that they kissed, you basically define their relationship, and that is a catalyst for the entire, like, game series, etc. But that doesn't happen. So it's like, that's why Chloe has to move out of the way. Oh, it's hard, man. But even if Gabe Chen didn't get hit by a boulder, we ain't got a game, man.
Well, I mean, he gets hit by a boulder, so he becomes a boulder.
Oh, dear God. Oh, that's a really tough one now. I couldn't believe we've got Nate. We're down to two characters I even think about either.
Yeah. I'm on the side of Kate Marsh being on there.
Are you really starting Kate Marsh? I'm kind of like leaning towards Gabe Chen a little bit now as well.
Yeah.
I thought, like, the way that you put it, when you put it into perspective, saying that's a key catalyst of event, it's like, yeah, it's like
that's the reason why True Colors is happening. And if we're going to put Rachel Amber on one, because she is the reason why, then Gabe Chen is also the reason why True Colors is happening. If Gabe Chen didn't die, everybody would be just in their own Colorado town selling flowers and having anxiety attacks.
Yeah, that would be the thing, wouldn't it? Ooh. He's stuck on Kate Marsh.
Yeah, I'm still sticking with Kate Marsh. Because again, like, name a more memorable event than on the roof.
However, the other argument would be that if, for example, she jumps off the roof and she dies.
Yes.
The story still continues.
Story still continues, but you're living with the guilt that you didn't save her.
Hmm.
And whether she jumps off the roof or not, that's giving you one of the biggest decisions in the first Life is Strange game. Who to blame? Is it Nathan? Is it David? Is it the real bad character, which we won't spoil because nobody has played this game. Just kidding. But you have to point your blame. Which one's the real killer here between the three? You know?
True.
Yeah, like, it's because of Kate that you have to make that decision. Whether she jumps or not, you have to make that decision. It's like, point the finger. Who do you think is the real enemy here? And who are the two red herrings?
I feel like Day Horton needs to hire you as an agent or something, like some PR spokesman. You're doing a very good job.
Yeah.
Something came up. Do you know what, though? Actually, you're probably right then at that point. Because I think like the kind of the knock-on effect of her dying in that game kind of like raises red flags about Dave Madsen at that point, and like other characters as well. So it's kind of like it intertwines with the rest of the story of like Rachel Amber. It's like, this person now died, and it's like, maybe it's the same killer as Rachel Amber, or it's, you know, someone else who's got this agenda and etc. So yeah, I think then she'd have to go on there, and I think Gabe Chen has to just narrowly miss out at that point then, at this point.
Yeah,
I think that would probably be the four faces. So you'd have Rachel Amber, Kate Marsh, Sean Diaz, and
William Price.
William Price. And yeah, that, again, that's not defined on what Mount Rushmore is, because again, people say it's like, oh, it's the greatest people of all time, blah blah. This is what actual Mount Rushmore means as well. If you're going to define it by the characters that are in the series, I think it would have to be those four. Sean is like a, I think, coin toss, really. I think that
it's
could be Daniel Diaz or
brothers,
him.
More like it, you know. It's like,
yeah,
Diaz brothers. You know,
yeah, it's the Diaz brothers. I only put on Sean mainly because of how he is and like the way he's positioned in the stories. And like, it's basically like, if Esteban doesn't die and Sean isn't framed for it, then we're not going anywhere. And it's like, he decides then to move us to Porto Lobos, Mex. So he's the one that's like, let's go. We need to go. And it's like, we start rolling. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I think we can call it a wrap on that. The four faces of Mount Rushmore for Life is Strange. Let us know in the comments what you think. If you're angry at Adam snubbing Chloe and Max, please let him know.
Proudly snubbing them.
Yeah. I mean, like, do it off that as well. If you're in the comments, let us know what you who you'd put on the four faces, but then do it in the same sense of what we've done, where it's like...
The Rushmore rules of it.
Yeah. Because I want to, like, define on, like, the actual what it, Mount Rushmore is, not, like, what other people throw out around as an interpretation. Let us know. I think, like, maybe you could swap one or two characters out there and position other people on there. But yeah, nonetheless, I hope you enjoyed that. Let us know your thoughts in the comments. Adam, spread the arts.
Yeah, let's do it. You want to go first? I always go first.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Then I'll go first. I think this is going to be a cop-out a little bit, but I will say that this bed we made will be mine at this point.
Okay.
I think, like, I just kind of want to, like, promote it again. Like, I enjoyed it for what it was. And I think, like, because we're recording on the 18th of November, you know, like, last night we had the leaks of, like, Last of Us Part 2 remastered coming out and people talking about that. And it's, like, in the conversation of things and people like, oh, it's only a $10 path upgrade for this remaster that's only 3 years old, lo and behold. But it's, like, I'm just, like, instead of putting that $10 towards that, which is basically a rehash of a game that you've seen already, and with, like, maybe one or two little other pieces of content, put it towards an indie studio and play, like, a new game. And support them and give them some kind of, like, you know, love for it. Because, like, I think that this bed we made, I don't regret spending the money that I did. I was happy with how much I spent on it. I was happy to support them, knowing that this studio is now going to get my money. I got their game. I enjoyed it. And it was something, it keeps the kind of, like, thing for me about video games happy, where it's like, I still enjoy playing games, especially from that, like, same realm of, like, 2015 period, from, like, 2010 to 2015. Because they really hit the kind of, like, the aesthetic, right, in terms of, like, the way that they were inspired by Life is Strange and other games. And generally speaking, just enjoyed it all the way through. Great performances as well. Great acting performances. Like, top-notch. Again, for an indie studio. Like, you don't know what your expectations are sometimes, as we spoke about before, about the Game Awards thing. It can be like, you know, oh, it's an indie studio. Yeah, it's bankrolled by a AAA publisher or something like that. It's like, that's not indie, but that these guys are indie. They are making an indie game. And they've, like, really put their heart and soul into this game. And it looks good. Visually, it looks really good. I'm impressed by the way they actually looked. They did a really good job with that. And it's even got Luke's stamp of approval as well. Luke played a couple of hours of it. I saw Michelle's response saying that I'm going to pick up myself. So, you know, you have people from Life is Strange who've, like, had some kind of close connection to the studio, enjoyed it. And then I enjoyed it myself. So I would recommend it. If you're looking for something that's Life is Strange-esque, pick it up, try it, see what you think. As well, I've kind of given my critiques and stuff, but I'm going to go through it myself as well. I want to play through my other Acolyte and see what's going to happen. But, you know, play it. Yeah. Enjoy Beth as well. You'll really enjoy Beth. She's something. She's quite the character. Very good. Very, very well-written character.
Yeah. Yourself? Mine is, well, of course, like, I dropped a new single, Secret Santa. It's weird. I don't think it's going to do that well. It's the second single coming out for my Christmas album coming out December 1st. Secret Santa. It's a weird one. Check it out. I don't care. But the other one, it's not my new discovered one, but, like, I forgot about it. And I just have to, I keep coming back to this album and I'm just like, it's so good, dude. It came out last year. The artist is Eric Nam. So it's Eric and last name N-A-M. He's a K-pop artist, and honestly, There and Back Again is such a really melodic K-pop album. Like, it's what, like, actually got me into, like, more K-pop genre, because I've listened to it before, but Eric Nam is the one that's like, okay, I can appreciate, like, the art behind K-pop. But There and Back Again, it's 7 songs, 20 minutes long. It's a really nicely, like, well developed, like, album. 7 songs. He really perfected each song there. So I want to say, yeah, like, There and Back Again by Eric Nam is really good. He came out with a new album this year called House on the Hill, which is also really good. But I keep coming back to There and Back Again. I don't know. I really like it. I really dig it. So if you're into K-pop or you wanted to, like, find a good K-pop artist, it's Eric Nam. Like, you should definitely check it out. There and Back Again.
Isn't the the rise of K-pop wild outside of Asia here. Like,
it's I think that a lot of countries will have like they're out of country pop. I mean, going back to the 60s, you know, the British Brigade, you know, the British like outbreak in America, you know. I think it's a similar way of that where just like the country has always had this music, but then other countries are discovering it, like, oh my god, this is revolutionary. And the other countries are like, yeah, revolutionary. Yep. The way we haven't been doing this for years.
I just wonder how like just because I just wonder how it connected with people now. Because I see people listening to it now more, or like seeing it and like appearing. And obviously, like for me, the first like kind of like, and growing up for sure, my age, the first kind of like wild phase of it was Gangnam Style with Psy. Like he came out of nowhere and he like dropped this single and like literally like blew up internationally. And then he did those ridiculous songs with Snoop Dogg and stuff like that. But that was like the kind of key catalyst. And then the kind of conversation at times saying that like, K-pop would become massive outside of Asia. People start listening to it. Then it went quiet again. And now I'm kind of like seeing people pick up on it again. And I think like
I'm glad it's picking up again. Yeah.
Is there like a band called like, is it 50/50 they called? A bunch of girls who K-pop?
Oh.
This one called Cupid?
I think it is 50/50. Yeah. Like, I'm thinking also BTR as well.
Yeah, it's like, that's what I mean. Like some of those like picked up because of TikTok. And I think like maybe that's like kind of carried it over.
Yeah.
With that. But it's interesting you mentioned that and you listen to K-pop. I find the rise of K-pop quite something outside of Europe. And Asia and outside of into the US and into other markets. It's quite an interesting phenomenon. But no, good recommendation.
Yeah. I dig it.
Good shout. Anyway, we'll wrap up here. That is the end of the episode. I think Kira will give an update as well. So we're going to change schedules for December. So basically Adam is going for a break. He's not leaving, thankfully. I'd be very angry. We just did the logo again. I'd be like, this guy's just leaving. I've just done this entire logo. No, Adam's taking a break. Strangecast is going to change a little bit. So we're going to record our end of year episode later on this month. And that will be a main segment. I'm not sure if there'll be any news in that. I might do this separate segment with just the news talking about it. If there's like anything major that happens and I need to cover it, I'll do that. But for the moment, we've got that planned. So that's going to be the end of December episode. I'm going to kind of like shoot myself in the foot here, maybe. This isn't guaranteed yet because we're recording ahead of time. The first episode of December that will come out will hopefully be an episode of me and Kylie Brown.
Hopefully.
So Kylie Brown is... So hopefully Kylie Brown will be back on this podcast early December. Still trying to work that out, still trying to get stuff sorted, but hopefully she's on here and I'm hoping to record with her next week. So that's kind of united. So Adam won't be there for that one. That'll just be me and Kylie, unfortunately. But as I said, he needs to rest because he's been working like 600 albums this year. It's not good for the mind. So that'll be our schedule. So you'll start the channel will just have like a Strangecast episodes in between it. I'm not too sure how much content's going to come out next month in terms of other interviews and stuff. Maybe it's worth me taking a break in between things. It's been a long year and stuff in between. But that's just an update. So as I said, this is your last episode of November. We're going to record our like end of year episode towards the end of November anyway, which will include Adam. It'll be a conversation. I might do a new segment before it. It might just be me. So just to kind of make you aware and not get a shock from it. And then obviously, hopefully, fingers crossed, it seems to be happening. But there'll be an interview with me and Kylie for the next Strangecast episode in early December. But that's to give you an update on things. But yeah, we are not going anywhere. Don't worry about that. The podcast is not ending yet. So all good. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that. If you did, please do drop us a like, turn on notifications, share with your friends, helps support the channel, helps keep up to date with the channel. And Strangecast is available on all podcast services. You're available on Apple Podcasts, you're available on Spotify with the video version. We're available everywhere, so follow us everywhere. And thank you to everyone who rated us on Spotify. We have 4.8 rating off of 11 review scores, which very happy about that. Like, you know, top marks off that. So happy with that. Thank you so much to anyone who's that. If you are listening, please do drop us a rating as well. It helps. And when I mean drop us a rating, drop us 5 stars. It helps. Anyway, let us know your Mount Rushmore in the comments. Let us know what you think. We'll read some of the best picks out as well in the next episode. As I said, we'll keep on up to date with that. Either way, enjoy the Strangecast episode. Stay tuned. We'll see you in December for the next episode. Take care, guys. Bye.
Later.
Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Brown.